Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
The 2016 campaign starts tomorrow, you know. In the meanwhile, we look at the cost of all this waiting around to find out who won today. Also, who's going to get the credit for the next 4 years? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Election Day, the 6th of November, 2012. Good as always to have you with us. So 4 years ago yesterday, the day after Election Day 2008, The Onion, the satirical newspaper, ran this headline. Black man given nation's worst job. Shocking. Funny. Also true. The economy was in a shambles, to be kind, and you can debate who deserves the credit for getting us out of it. But there is no question who's going to get that credit, the next guy. Marketplace's Mark Garrison has more on that story now from New York.
Whoever spends the next 4 years in the White House starts with a hopeful economic picture, says Jim Milstein, recently the Treasury Department's chief restructuring officer.
There should be good momentum greeting the new Congress and the new president at the door in January.
Housing prices are rising nationwide, and in the next 4 years, Moody's Analytics predicts 12 million jobs added and unemployment plummeting below 6%. IHS Global Insight expects nearly 10 million new jobs. If anything like that happens, it'll be great news for today's winner and his party. But presidential historian Douglas Brinkley says that may not be fair.
There are some presidents that get lucky, that get to ride the wave of things.
Bill Clinton defeated the elder President Bush by focusing on the economy. Yet to this day, Bush supporters point to signs of an upswing late in his term. They gripe that President Clinton didn't create the 90s boom by himself. Brinkley says they have a point.
Clinton gets a lot of the credit, the lion's share of it, but some of it belonged to Bush.
Many historians and economists think voters give presidents too much credit or blame regarding the economy anyhow. All these rosy predictions presume Washington makes a deal to avoid the tax increases and spending cuts of the fiscal cliff. If not, says Nigel Gault of IHS Global Insight, all bets are off.
Clearly, that would be a disastrous start to the term of the next president.
If the economy goes over the fiscal cliff, the bright four-year forecasts will be dramatically dimmer. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
I saw a great tweet today from Benjamin Applebaum at the New York Times. I hate that wait, he said, between when I vote and when I find out who won. And that really is kind of the way it's been lately, hasn't it? You're waiting for the returns to come in, or you're waiting in line right now to vote, or maybe you're waiting for the lights to come on in New York, or waiting in line for gas in New Jersey, all the while waiting for that nor'easter to hit the day after tomorrow. Well, wait no more for Marketplace's Shireen Marisol Meraji on the psychology and the economics of waiting, all in 90 seconds. No waiting required. Here you go.
When that Tom Petty song came out, Ronald Reagan was president, the economy was bad, and so were things in the Middle East. 30 years later, the economy is worse, things in the Middle East are still tense, and waiting to find out who will lead our country, still the hardest part.
And I've logged on to the 538 blog 5 times already today since I woke up at 5 o'clock worrying about the election.
That man incessantly checking the New York Times blog is
Daniel Hammermesh, professor of economics, University of Texas at Austin. I hate waiting. My wife says I'm the most impatient person she's ever met.
But Hammermesh says there's no way to quantify how waiting for election results impacts the economy. Waiting to vote, that he can put a dollar amount on.
Let's say the average person is waiting only 1 hour, which is probably low, and let's say 2/3 of the electorate is waiting.
That's 90 million people, and Hammermesh says if they make $12 an hour,
that's about $1 billion right there.
In lost wages. Hammermesh is a fan of early voting, voting by mail, that kind of thing. Cuts down on all those lost wages. But Dick Larson, professor of engineering systems at MIT, who calls himself
Dr. Q,
thinks queuing to vote is feel-good waiting.
You see your neighbors from your own voting district, and you're standing there having a cup of coffee, chatting, everyone's smiling, kind of celebrating the democracy that we live in. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I don't see any substitute for that.
Larson says we can't afford a no-wait society. Grocery stores would have to have more checkout lines, highways, more lanes. So whether it's the hardest part or the best, we're stuck with it. I'm Shireen Marisol Meraji for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, all three major indices finished the day higher than where they started. You know what that has to do with the election, right? Yeah, abso-bleepin-lutely nothing. That's what. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The driving force in this election, beyond candidates and campaigns and parties, has been money. Money from super PACs and outside groups that has fundamentally changed the calculation on political spending. Hundreds of millions of dollars has been poured into campaign and issues ads. And now that the campaign is over, you'd be justified in thinking all those groups would just kind of go away. You'd also be wrong. From Washington Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Ganser explains.
Super PACs and other outside political groups are here to stay, and so are the ads they run, like these, concerning issues on the ballot today in Maryland and California.
Baltimore casino that would create jobs. It's an empty lot.
Let's talk about education.
But now these groups will be talking about post-election stuff. Jonathan Collegio is the spokesman for the American Crossroads Super PAC and its sister nonprofit, Crossroads GPS. Both groups support conservative causes and together have spent nearly $180 million this election season, according to the Sunlight Foundation. Collegio ticks off a list of issues Crossroads cares about.
Energy independence, tackling the debt, making sure that we have a flatter, fairer tax system, healthcare.
I met Collegio at Crossroads Washington headquarters. There's nothing temporary about it. He has a nice office, two computer screens to peer at, Tums and Tylenol within easy reach. Collegio says Crossroads will watch what the lame duck Congress does after the election, especially on the looming fiscal cliff of automatic tax increases and spending cuts. Collegio says Crossroads could start running anti-tax ads later this month.
It could be that soon, amazingly.
Are you tired?
I have a six-week-old at home, so that makes me even more tired than you might imagine.
The American Crossroads Super PAC isn't a baby anymore. It's 2 years old now. In true toddler fashion, it's exploring the limits of its power. Collegio says American Crossroads will lobby. If Mitt Romney wins the election, it'll help promote his agenda. It'll work with Republicans on Capitol Hill. For their part, Super PAC supporting Democrats will push their party's agenda. But the Super PAC's superpowers are troubling for some.
Once this genie's out of the bottle, it's hard to put it back.
Campaign finance lawyer Trevor Potter was general counsel for John McCain in the 2008 election. He worries that outside political groups will use their power to set up meetings for wealthy donors at the White House or on Capitol Hill.
Essentially, the selling of access and the opportunity to argue a position for money.
Collegio says American Crossroads and Crossroads GPS won't do that. But campaign finance reformers are concerned. Bill Allison is editorial director at the Sunlight Foundation. He says there is one check on the Super PAC superpowers, you.
With so much money moving through the system, you're going to find those kinds of political scandals that get the American public really engaged again and angry, and that's when you get reform.
Or at least proposals for reform in Congress, which the Super PACs could lobby against. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Today is the last time, for a while anyway, that we're going to have to deal with a map as the lead story of the day. You know the one I'm talking about. It's red and blue, got electoral votes written all over it. Tells the story of politics in this country. That's what maps do, after all, tell stories, which is what makes being able to read them so important. Harm DeBlay is a professor of geography at Michigan State University. His new book is called Why Geography Matters Now More Than Ever. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You actually have your students, or you recommend that your students sit down and read a map as they would read a novel, right, as they would actually read a book.
I do suggest to my students that if they spend, let us say, 20 minutes on two columns of text in a book, they ought to spend that 20 minutes on the map. That is maybe on another page. If a picture is worth 1,000 words, a map can be worth 1,000,000 words.
You write early in this book about how you got into geography, about being a child in Europe, in Holland, in the Second World War.
Yes.
And I'd love to get your take now on the map of Europe and how it has changed in your lifetime, just the coming together of the European Union and now, quite possibly, potentially, who knows, maybe, the dissolution or the sundering somehow of that union.
My 9/11 happened on May 14, 1940, when my hometown, Rotterdam, was destroyed by the Nazis. When that war ended, my parents, who were musicians, were sure that Stalin would be next, and my parents were not going to make the same mistake again. They were going to leave. But, of course, as they left, the European Union was beginning to develop. Six members, then nine, and eventually now we're at 28 with the ascent of Croatia. The question is, did that integration, which has taken not much more than half a century, did it go too fast and therefore became too shallow to encompass all the diversity that European politics, economics, and culture entails? It does seem as though there is a reversal underway, and that are going to be several Europes. And you wonder if that's tenable, whether a Europe that is divided in an era of globalization will have the cohesion to survive.
Well, so what do you think? You're the professional geographer. Because it's more than just lines on a map, right?
Oh, absolutely. This is the point. The fact of the matter is, this is people's attitudes. Why we talk about the Greeks as supposedly being lazy and not paying their taxes and not. You say, what do I think? I was born in the Netherlands. I grew up in a pretty, frankly, fractious society. My first 10 years of life, including those 5 years of the war, made me realize it's the system that's got to prevent it. And unfortunately, in Europe, the system that they've tried to create to get over their fractiousness in various context is not working well.
Harm DeBlay is a professor of geography at Michigan State University. His most recent book is called Why Geography Matters More Than Ever. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Back to that map I mentioned in the setup. We've got our own red-blue infographic for you. Working America versus not working America. Votes by unemployment rate. It's at marketplace.org. Coming up tomorrow at the office, when people start talking politics, do this.
Say something nice, honor the other person's opinion, then say, well, I feel this way or I think this way.
Day after the election etiquette. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials picked up 133 points today, 1% closed at 13,245. The NASDAQ jumped 0.4%, 12 points, 3,011. The S&P 500 accelerated 0.75%, 11 points, closed at 1,428. Financial stocks led the climb. Citigroup took home 3% today. Morgan Stanley clicked up 2.5%. Bank of America pocketed nearly 2%. Defense stocks were also on the rise. United Technologies revved up 2.75%. Raytheon lit up 1.5%. Shares in Lockheed Martin moved up 0.8%. AOL logged a huge gain after reporting higher profits thanks to its strongest ad growth in 7 years. Online company shares soared 22% today. Overseas exchanges were up across the board, and a special guest today on the foreign list, Turkey. The country's credit rating was raised to investment grade for the first time since 1994. That sent its stock market to record highs. Back home, bonds fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 1.75%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Wednesday. In Washington, the Federal Reserve is scheduled to release consumer credit data for September. Mac and cheese, anyone? Kraft reports its quarterly earnings. And on November 7th, 1944, Franklin D. Roosevelt was elected to a fourth term in office. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace. From APM, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This election is, or has been, I guess you'd say, a referendum on one number, the unemployment rate, 7.9% nationally. The key word there being nationally, because in some places it's way higher and in some way lower. So on the theory that all politics is local, two stories now about joblessness and presidential politics. David Weinberg starts us off from San Bernardino, California, where unemployment pushes 12%.
I arrive at the Unified Baptist Church just as the sun comes up over the San Bernardino Mountains and starts warming the Spanish tiles on the roof. A poll worker tapes a sign to the white stucco facade of the building. In English and Spanish, it says polling place. There's no line when another poll worker in a pink hoodie opens the door, revealing a row of small electronic voting machines. Quietly and unceremoniously, Election Day 2012 has begun. You guys come early to vote before you go to work?
I mean, I don't work.
We're not working.
Lee Carey and his friend are out of work. Carey's a trained mechanic, but recently lost his job as a security guard. The upside, he says, is that it makes voting easy.
Yeah, real easy, because you can go what time you want to go. If you work, you have to wait till you get off work, then rush home and change or whatever, and then go vote at your voting place. So that's just like a hassle.
Despite having wildly different economies, San Bernardino and Oklahoma City are connected by Route 66. And 1,200 miles up the famed highway is a city with an unemployment rate around 5%. And my colleague Michael Cross picks up the story at a Baptist church there.
It's the Northwest Baptist Church in Oklahoma City. This morning, voters from three different districts stand in line to vote. Most are dressed for work. They mill about, work on their phones, before grabbing a ballot, filling it out in a sort of cardboard cubicle, and feeding it into a machine. Kyle Thomas calls himself an underemployed artist/actor. When it comes to getting out and voting, he says it shouldn't matter whether you have a job.
It may for some, but I don't think it ought to. I mean, I think if people are motivated to work, then whoever is in elected office, it's none of their business.
Some voters here credit the low unemployment rate to state leaders, and they say they're voting less on the economy and more on social issues. Paula Stidham is a customer service representative for an elderly center.
We're in the Bible Belt. It probably has much to do with that, more about our Bible than sometimes about our politics.
Like most of the voters here, Paula is in and out of the church in about 30 minutes and on her way to work without much of a delay.
By 9 a.m. here in San Bernardino, a line of about a dozen people has formed. It's just inching forward. A little girl leans on her grandmother's wheelchair looking bored. Her only entertainment is a gopher sticking its head out of a hole on the church's lawn.
I think that everyone should come out and vote because, you know, times are tough and people have a lot of issues and things have to be addressed.
Kathleen Foley is also unemployed. Her job as a workers' comp specialist was phased out after 21 years. She says she's always voted and will continue to vote whether she's employed or not.
There's a lot of people that are off work, but I think if we have the right person in office, we'll steadily increase and do better.
Employed or unemployed, that's a goal that every voter shares. In San Bernardino, I'm David Weinberg.
And in Oklahoma City, I'm Michael Cross for Marketplace.
There's not a whole lot of mystery about who's going to get Hawaii's four electoral votes. President Obama was born there, after all. But the outcome is less clear for the biggest public works project that state has ever seen, a $5 billion rail project that could ease a terrible problem they're having out there with traffic. Joe Rubin has more.
If you're a typical tourist flying into Honolulu Airport, traffic might not seem that bad. But it's a different story for a lot of the residents who live in crowded West Oahu. They endure what studies say is simply the worst traffic in the nation. Maida Timpson typically spends 90 minutes commuting 20 miles to her job at a downtown bank. This morning is no different.
We're in the battle heading toward the Bermuda Triangle.
Whoa.
16 miles.
Wall of red.
Timpson was so fed up with traffic, she started a group called Go Rail Go. the organization helped pass a measure that funded Rail, something she said was long overdue.
When the kids have events or soccer games or whatever, we can't come because we're stuck in the traffic.
Timpson says what gives her hope for the future are the giant concrete pillars that have been rising just a few miles from her home. The pillars are designed to carry the rail line.
The project is 20 mile long and will take about 40,000 cars off the road.
That's Dan Grabowskis, who heads up Oahu's rail project. A rapid transit system has been debated on the island for decades. But with hundreds of millions spent on actual construction, it seemed like rail was finally moving forward. But that was before Ben Cayetano, the folksy and popular former governor of Hawaii, threw his hat in the ring for mayor. I caught up with Cayetano as he chatted with voters at a chili and rice dinner.
Many people think that rail is more energy efficient than bus. This is a myth.
Cayetano is running pretty much on a single issue, to kill rail and to replace it with less expensive buses. He has gained some traction with voters by pursuing the argument that the elevated rail line will mar the island and that it will do little to help with the traffic mess. His opponents say thousands of jobs will be lost. They also point out the island will forfeit $1.5 billion of federal funding.
$1.5 billion might seem very attractive, but you should never build anything just to get money.
The rail line faces some additional hurdles. A lawsuit has stalled construction for the moment. But Dan Grabowskis is keeping a brave face. He says big transit projects like his always face big challenges, and that rail is simply needed.
We have the worst traffic in the United States. We've looked at alternatives from bus rapid transit to adding more lanes to the highway, and this is really the best way to go.
The race for mayor of Honolulu is considered simply too close to call. But something everyone agrees on, the future of rail is on the line tonight. In Oahu, I'm Joe Rubin for Marketplace.
Even after 2 years of close to constant campaigning, there's probably still at least a couple of days worth of talking yet to do about this election. It'll be the office water cooler conversation tomorrow for sure, which can be perilous because politics is often one of those subjects best not talked about at work. But how do you not talk about the presidential election, right? Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith has today's etiquette in the workplace story.
Talking politics at work, yay or nay? Voters were divided at one Los Angeles polling site.
I think it's kind of taboo. Most people kind of just keep it to themselves.
We've made a few jokes as Election Day has approached because we're split.
The owners of my company are definitely Obama supporters in the office. I hear a lot of that.
There are workers in every office who want to talk politics and want everyone to know their political views. Like Daniel Nari. He says his coworkers tend to be tolerant.
Open, listening. Sometimes it's, you know, a quiet just kind of nod. There's a visual note that they don't want to particularly engage in that conversation, and I respect that.
Talking politics in the workplace is tricky, especially this year, says management consultant Susan Heathfield.
I've heard everything from coworkers yelling at each other to people not speaking to each other to, you know, rifts in relationships.
Which makes it all the more important not to gloat tomorrow if your candidate wins, she says. In general, Heathfield recommends avoiding political talk at the office. But that's not how many of us feel, according to a new survey from job site CareerBuilder. It found 44% of workers felt comfortable expressing political views at the office. 42% didn't. Rosemary Hafner heads human resources at CareerBuilder.
We found out workers are discussing politics, discussing this presidential election, and discussing their positions. And they're doing that rather actively.
Workplace etiquette expert Cindy Seed says there is a right way to talk politics with your colleagues.
Use what I call the sandwich technique. Maybe start out with a phrase such as, well, I'm sure you have your own opinions.
Seed says people should also be aware of what they say on social media. Voter Steve Lichtman says he tries to remember that.
Especially nowadays with Twitter and Facebook, it's pretty easy to declare your allegiances, and I try and keep it under control, but it's hard sometimes.
Twitter and Facebook are kind of the new water coolers. In Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Marketplace theme of the day today, as we said up top, is waiting. Waiting at the polls, waiting for the winner. So we went out on Facebook and Twitter today to find out what else y'all have been waiting for.
Most recently, the last Harry Potter book. Didn't want any spoilers before I could read it. Before that, concert tickets and two Black Fridays. Turns out I'm both patient and cheap.
Hall & Oates tickets in high school. Thank goodness music preferences change over time.
Getting into a restaurant for my free meal on Veterans Day.
A good job. I would wait in line for 2 hours for a really good red velvet cupcake, but not four. 4 hours would be obsessive, right?
For a drink. I already wait 8 hours every day as it is.
Join us on Facebook and on Twitter and on Marketplace.org. Tonight, we'll be watching the election returns. We'd love you to watch with us.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note today, it's for everybody who snuck out of the office for an hour or more to vote. You know who didn't have to sneak out to vote today? Members of the United Auto Workers Union, that's who. Turns out UAW members have had Election Day off since 1999. It's in their contract with all three of the big three car makers. So there you go, which is to say vote if you haven't already. All right, we got to go. That's Marketplace from APM on this Election Day. Today, the Dow picked up 133 points, 1%. The NASDAQ jumped 0.4%, 12 points. The S&P 500 sped up 0.75%, 11 points. Thanks to Sean Bowditch, Mary Dew, Justin Ho, and Katie Long on our Morning Report crew. The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by Rod Abid. I'm Kai Rizdal. We'll see you back here tomorrow, buddy. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.